And always, 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 Gina, RMR, it's all for you.
This is the Quality News Network. Congressional Democrats are rejecting the White House plan to withdraw 30,000 U.S. troops from Iraq by summer of 2008. Senate Majority Whip Harry Reid of Nevada says the proposal laid out Monday on Capitol Hill by General David Petraeus does not go far enough and is unacceptable to him and to the American people. Democratic leaders are outlining legislation to try and limit U.S. involvement in Iraq sooner and more completely. General Petraeus, meantime, spoke at the National Press Club today after 2 days of congressional testimony. Petraeus told members that Iranian insurgents in Iraq are posing a danger and undermining efforts to stabilize the country. In Vienna today, three Austrian citizens were arrested on suspicion that they are Al-Qaeda supporters. The three who are Muslims are believed to be connected with a threatening Al-Qaeda video on the internet. Two powerful congressional Democrats say they'll oppose the nomination of former Solicitor General Ted Olson to be the next U.S. Attorney General. Senators Patrick Leahy and Harry Reid both say Olson would be a poor choice to replace outgoing Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. Russian President Vladimir Putin unexpectedly appointed a new Russian premier and cabinet today. Putin's second term in office ends next year, and he cannot run for a third term. Some political analysts say Putin's nomination of Viktor Zubkov is his way of ensuring he can still run the country after leaving office. Meantime, the Russian military has successfully tested what it described as the world's most powerful non-nuclear air-delivered bomb. That's according to Russian state television reports. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe announced his resignation today at a news conference in Tokyo. Abe's 1 year in office has been racked with scandal concerning financial or electoral misconduct by members of his cabinet. His approval rating has sunk to just 30% in recent public opinion polls. At least five people are dead in the wake of an 8.4 magnitude earthquake struck off the coast of Indonesia's Sumatra's island earlier today. Many buildings collapsed along Sumatra's western coast, sending frightened people into the streets. The estimated cost of removing 12 million illegal immigrants from the U.S. would be at least $94 billion. You're listening to the Quality News Network. A look at science and business is next.
PM Forney is on a mission to make life better. His pathway is civility. A professor at Johns Hopkins University, his pioneering study in civility produced a book called Choosing Civility, The 25 Rules of Considerate Conduct. In his book, Forney explains what is civility and what it means to be civil in today's world. He explores the recent decline of civility and offers ways that the direction might be reversed. His brilliant and engaging discourse outlines civility's basic rules, underscoring the values that practicing civility brings to our own lives, as well as to the lives of others. Forney's book is sprinkled with stimulating quotes, such as this by Dwight Curry, who said, "We have a choice about how we behave, and that means we have the choice to opt for civility and grace." For more information, click the Civility button on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
Scientists today are monitoring a journey into a crater on the red planet by a Mars robotic rover. NASA says the crater the rover Opportunity will study may enlighten researchers about Mars climate eons ago. Banana company Chiquita has sealed a deal with the Justice Department to plead guilty to one count of paying bribes to terrorists in Colombia. Chiquita will pay a $25 million fine. In a study reported in today's issue of the AMA's journal, clinical trials involving long-term use of diabetes drug Avandia increased the risk of heart attack by more than 40%. The value of U.S. exports of goods and services increased almost 3% in July. Exports and imports reached record levels. Analysts say the numbers indicate strong global demand and higher prices. The retiring head of the FAA is warning airlines to improve their increasing problems with delayed flights or expect the government to step in and do it for them. Through July, U.S. Airlines posted a record number of delayed and late flights. Despite OPEC's promise to modestly increase oil production for the coming winter, light sweet crude oil trading at an all-time high today at the $80 a barrel mark for the first time. Currently, light sweet crude trading at $79.91 a barrel. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow down 17 points at 13,291. And there's always more on our website at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 39 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the GLBT version of Conversation Radio. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. We are, in fact, live, if you're listening on a Wednesday evening, around 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern, on September the 12th of 2007. You are indeed listening to a live show that you can call into. The toll-free number is 1-877, the number 4, head-on. That's 877, the number 4, head-on. Also, if you have an unlimited long-distance calling plan, you can use 304-658-3333. Mail arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. And the show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com. There you'll find links to all of the guests that we have on the show, as well as to their audio archives if you've missed an interview you'd like to hear. All of the past shows are listed there by month with calendar dates. You'll find links on strictlyconfidentialradio.com to the chat room and to the Head On Radio Network main site. You can find out about all the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network, and there are many, and they are varied, and they're all from the heart and excellent. There are also links there for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page, and you can locate music you hear on the show at strictlyconfidentialradio.com. And you know what we're going to do tonight, what I would like to do first? I would like to get that whole thing out of the way about the double murder-suicide. I'm not going to recap that again, but I'm going to go to a different story that is related to it that I think puts a different light on it. I'm not so sure that it was a double murder suicide. The lover's triangle of the three gay guys in Orlando, two of which were lovers, and a third fellow who was there, who they say did the shooting and then shot himself, is tied up with an escort service in Virginia. The reason I'm saying that is because, and you'll understand when we get there, is because wherever Tom Feeney goes, people die. It's the bluntest way to put it. Gonzalez, one of the folks that was murdered down there, has many ties to Tom Feeney. He was the congressional campaign. He was the chairperson for that campaign. And he was also involved in a state representative campaign for Feeney when Feeney got the House Speaker in Florida, and was involved in the software buying scandal that involved Yang Enterprises, Feeney was. And Feeney is, of course, best known for vote rigging in the 2000 election and asking for the software that could flip votes. And he's also known for the unexplained death of a Florida State investigator in Valdosta, Georgia. It's about 80 miles north of Tallahassee, where I am located. To fully appreciate all this, another clue I should point out to you is that, in fact, the deafening silence with which the mainstream media is covering this double murder homicide, considering the level that these folks were in the Republican Party, is just astounding. And it touches so many people, it's just astounding. And it has everything the mainstream media loves. It has sex, it has It has closet gay people. It has big names in Congress. It has stolen an election. It had, well, I guess not. Maybe it has everything that, in fact, the mainstream media does not like to talk about, unless it's something sensational like the toe-tapping, pot-sitting guy. But let's begin here. It's so many different ways to approach it. But let's start with Raymond Leem. Now, he was an investigator for the Florida Inspector General's Office at the Florida Department of Transportation. He's dead now. Some say suicide, not very many. The official spin is suicide. I think when we get through this, you're going to understand, as I do, that suicide is about the last thing that happened to Raymond Leem. Leem was the investigator, you see, who was assigned to the case of Clint Curtis. Now, Clint Curtis is a Florida programmer, and he made some very interesting allegations about a Chinese spying organization and a computer rigging vote system in Florida that the Chinese, the communist Chinese espionage, they were hooked up in it. And computer vote rigging, you see, Curtis worked for this company, this Yang electronics company in Florida. It's amazing. In 2004, I'll get in the right century, just give me a minute. I've got electricity. Yeah, right. I've got electricity now, so it's 2004, not 1904. I remember it well. So, Congress heard sworn testimony from Florida programmer Clint Curtis, who created the vote rigging software for the 2000 election in Florida for the Florida machines at the request of Tom Feeney. Now, Tom Feeney is hooked up with the Bush family in more ways than you can shake a stick at. Feeney wanted Curtis. Now, Curtis, by the way, is a fellow Republican, if there's such a thing amongst that ilk. And Curtis's employer was the Yang Enterprises. Feeney wanted Curtis to produce untraceable programs that could be used to, quote, control the vote, end quote, as needed. Now, this is all reported on by Brad Freeman and a number of other bloggers. It's fairly well documented. In fact, as we get deeper into it, there are photocopies, there's police photographs. You're not going to believe this. If you haven't heard the story, I was just amazed. Just amazed. Bob mentioned the other evening, we got into the story for the first time that one of the people we're talking about was killed in Georgia. And this is, in fact, the very person he was referring to. Feeney also told Curtis that Bush had plans to suppress the black vote with exclusion lists. Curtis has testified to this under oath. And in fact, that's exactly what happened. The computer, the purging of the Florida election, as you know, there was the company was hired to compile lists of felons from every state in the entire southeast part of the country. And if your name was even similar to a fellow who was arrested for a felony in Texas, if your name was similar to it and you lived in Florida, you were purged. And there was a heavy leaning on that toward trying to eliminate black voters because, as you well know, black folks are locked up at a much higher rate than anybody else in the country. So that's what happened. Curtis wrote the software. Now, after this, Feeney, by the way, he was Jeb's running mate, Jeb Bush's running mate for the first gubernatorial campaign. So you see, Feeney is hooked up with the Bush family tightly, as I said. And, of course, he was rewarded for this vote-flipping software with a congressional seat. In 2002, Raymond at this point is a Florida State government inspector. He took up Curtis's charges. In other words, he's going to, in a sense, begin the prosecution or begin the investigation of Curtis saying that he had written this software. Now, I don't have the clue about why Curtis came out with what was supposed to be a secret and is beginning to explain to people why he in fact wrote the software and why he is in fact telling people that Feeney, the Bush family, had explained to Feeney that the black voters would be excluded, which they were in huge numbers. I don't have that particular clue. That's an interesting aspect. I need to find that out. But it's in any case, he did. He flipped, in other words. Curtis, the charges that Leem is picking up included corruptions, involving Feeney and Yang Enterprises, and the Yang employee is charged with peddling military technologies to the Chinese. In June of 03, Lim, who's the investigator again, told Curtis he had tracked the corruption all the way to the top. That is a quote. And I think that remark got him dead. He also explained that the story was going to break in just a few weeks regarding this corruption he had tracked into this to all the way to the top. Now, he told this to Curtis in June of 2003, at some point near the middle of the month of June. Only days later, this investigator, Lim, was found dead in a Georgia hotel room just across the Florida border. Now, the local police in Valdosta, I know Valdosta, it's just a little Georgia town, no big deal. The local police ruled that Lim, by the way, Lim's a happily married man. He was planning his daughter's wedding. He loved his daughter very much, talked about her often. In fact, that was one of his favorite things to talk about. Apparently, Lim, according to the police, suddenly just decided to slash his wrists. Now, at first, the police were saying there were no photographs of the death scene, none at all, but then later the pictures turned up on the Internet and were confirmed to be authentic by the Valdosta Police Department. The photos clearly contradicted the original suicide report from the Valdosta Police Department. I presented evidence, for example, that Lim had been beaten before his death. The Valdosta Police investigation was reopened for a brief period of time after they were embarrassed by the fact that a police officer had actually had these photographs and leaked them, but then it was abruptly shut down again after the local police department spoke to a never-identified somebody in the Florida state government, Jeb Bush, no doubt. Now, the local press in Valdosta tried to, quote, manage the situation for Jeb Bush and Feeney, and Lord have mercy. As well as the vote fraud, Curtis had testified to illegal shipment of computer chips to China, and the employee from Yang Enterprises admitted to all of it about these illegal computer chip shipments, and entered into a plea agreement with the regarding the contract between the Florida Department of Transportation and the programming company. So it was, he accepted a plea agreement. Yes, that was real. And by the way, Curtis has passed a polygraph exam concerning all of his allegations about he was told by Lim about it was going to break in a few weeks. It had been traced all the way to the top. That was all documented and passed the polygraph. The vote rigging in Florida story passed the polygraph. And then you get to the extraordinary and very unlikely death of Raymond Lim, and it adds up to conspiracy, and it stinks to high heaven, and it's pretty strange. Here's a summary of it. Curtis stated in his affidavit that Lim told him in June of 2003 he had tracked the corruption all the way to the top. The story's going to break in a few weeks. Okay. Within a matter of days, Lim's body was found in a motel in Valdosta, Georgia, about 80 miles from Tallahassee, just over the Georgia line. You see, in Florida, when there is a suicide, there is a mandatory autopsy. That's not the case in Georgia. So all you have to do is drive a fellow over the state line. Tallahassee is only 30 miles from the state line. In fact, they didn't even have to go to Valdosta. They didn't have to drive 80 miles to get to Valdosta. There's motels in Georgia closer than that. But I guess they thought Thomasville was a little too close. So they headed off to Valdosta, where there would be no mandatory autopsy following the death. There's no such requirement in Georgia. His wife reported him missing on the very first day she could not locate him. Now, that was June 30. June 30th, she could not locate him. Now, the documentation from the motel says that he signed in on June 29th. Now, even better than that, he signed out on June 30th. Now, that's pretty interesting because, you see, on June 30th, he was dead. Wonder how a dead man signs out. Now, there's, of course, the remote possibility that there was an error in the computer at the motel, but that still doesn't explain how a dead man checks out. I think that it's pretty unlikely there's an error on the computer at the hotel. You see, this was paid for with a credit card, and as you've all seen the credit card swiping machines, the time on those machines is set for the main servers at the credit card company. You can't have all these machines showing up at a different time. There has to be a consistent time standard for, you know, tracking credit and any number of things, somebody stealing your card and when it was used and the whole bit. In other words, that credit card scanner had the right date. It's pretty unlikely there was any discrepancy because of an error of the card signer, a swiper. He left an unsigned suicide note that does not mention his daughter, the daughter that he loved very much, and the daughter that he talked about often, and who was going to be married in 3 weeks, and he was very involved in the planning. Everybody knew that it was very out of character for Lem to just disappear like he did. Now, the Valdosta police investigators reported that they had no crime scene photos due to malfunctions of the flash memory cards, plural, in the digital camera they used. In other words, more than one card failed. Pretty unusual. The photographs were later, though, released by an honest cop for the Valdosta Police Department. Nobody knows who. They appeared on the Internet. The police department lied, and they were very embarrassed about it because, in fact, there were photographs, quite a few. Okay, the investigators reported that Lem killed himself in this Valdosta motel by slitting his wrists and that there was no other trauma to the body. However, the photographs, which have been confirmed by the Valdosta Police Department as being authentic, those crime scene photos show an unmistakable discoloration to the side of his neck, as if it had been snapped, you know, to knock him out before the murderers slit his wrists and staged the suicide. They lied in other ways, too. The police report states, on the bathroom floor next to the bathtub was a black man's belt, which was lying on top of a white hotel bath mat. The belt appeared to have been used as a tourniquet. Dried blood was visible on the belt, but not visible on the towel. It's an absolute lie. The photographs clearly show blood all over the towel. Minor detail, but just another lie. So, I'll tell you, the Valdosta Police Department, when the photographs came out, they opened the investigation again, and boy, they shut it right back down after, they will only say a phone call from a Florida official. Now, this man worked for the state of Florida. Why would Florida want this investigation shut down? Well, an autopsy would probably tell you, just not mandated. Why would a guy who wanted to kill himself drive 80 miles to the sleaziest motel in Valdosta, Georgia? And there's some photographs of it. It's pretty sleazy. It wasn't a name brand hotel. Something like the Knights Inn. I have the title here somewhere. I'll come across it. In addition, a witness saw three men standing outside of Lem's room and remarked that they thought it was strange that there were three men standing outside of his room. In a supplemental report indicates that the police were summoned because, get this, the motel supposedly summoned the police department because a customer refused to vacate a hotel room. Now, you know, that's kind of interesting. Do the Valdosta police really enforce checkout time in Valdosta? I mean, do they normally do that? It's not like the guy was in there, you know, with the door locked, screaming he's not going to pay. And he was only 2 hours late checking out, and the customer had signed a checkout receipt at 6:54 a.m., by the way. He had already signed a checkout receipt at 6:54, well before the Valdosta police were called to investigate a customer who would not leave the motel. But because he was dead at 6:54 a.m., obviously he did not sign the checkout receipt. Lem's watch was placed next to the seat. It was neatly done, and it had stopped. You have to wonder why it stopped. Did it get broken during the kidnapping? One wonders. The people investigating, this is the Brad blog folks doing this particular bit that I'm giving you now. The information is coming from Brad blog, which we all know and respect. They had hoped to speak to Detective Shannon Floyd. Now, see, she's the one who took the crime scene photos. She's the one who wrote the very detailed reports about everything that was in the room, and that it was a suicide, and about the towel, and about the... she's the one who wrote the report about the camera's flash memory cards, plural. You wonder why more than one had failed. She's the one who wrote that. And she's the one who said there was no signs of trauma, disregarding the obviously bruised neck. She said in her report that nothing was observed that would indicate foul play. She described there being no visible blood on the white towel. She described the stopped watch and the check-in and check-out receipts along with the dates, but mentioned absolutely nothing about the consistency of these dates. Not a word about that. So you see, when Brad Blog called, they wanted to talk to her. Let's talk to this woman. Let's find out why in the heck, you know, what gives. You know, you've acknowledged that these photographs are real. What gives? So they call and talk to Valdosta's Captain Childress. They have a Childress there. And he informed Brad Blog that Detective Floyd was no longer with the department and was now teaching at a diverse university. She had to be gotten rid of, you see, because she could be questioned about her false police report. He said he did not feel it appropriate to let Brad Blog or anyone else know where she was teaching. In a second call that Brad Blog made, he simply said, Detective Floyd does not work for us anymore. She left. She's teaching somewhere. I'm not going to tell you where she is. Her husband said she didn't want to talk to the media. I spoke with him last night after we first spoke. Pretty interesting. You can get away with stuff like that, isn't it? It's very interesting. Now, investigators are not the real investigators, but people who are investigating this, they're the bloggers, that this vote fraud thing goes all the way to the top of Florida's government. The thugs who run Florida basically have enforcers kidnap investigators. They kidnapped Mr. Lean, and they drove him to the nearest place where he could be safely murdered, if he wasn't already murdered when he was put in the trunk of a car. Not that I have any proof he was in the trunk of a car, but where he could be safely killed in an autopsy would not be run. They could knock him out, then slit his wrists, and then they put pressure on the local investigators, who are now no doubt used to doing dirty work for Florida thugs. You know, this is South Georgia, by the way, near the very seat of power in Florida. They lose the crime scene photos, say they never exist. Honest Cop releases the photos, so the preparer has to report what? The preparer is the woman. That's what was her name? Just a few lines back, Floyd. She's gone. So the preparer has to disappear. Floyd's gone. The local police have to shut up, and one phone call from Tallahassee shuts the whole reopening of the investigation down. So the staged suicide is proof, in my estimation, that the allegations of Clint Curtis are absolutely true. He did pass a lie detector test, you know. There are other articles that back all of this up. The Chinese software company, I'm looking at a very neatly written suicide note that is unsigned. It reads, 8:10 a.m. By the way, he checked out at 6:57 a.m. Nonetheless, the suicide is at the top. 8:10 a.m. I love my family with all my heart. I am sorry. I am depressed and in pain. Marianne, I love you. Marianne is his wife's name. So he wrote this note after he was dead, apparently. More confirmation about the daughter. I have photographs of the checkout. It's a place is called a Knight's Inn in Valdosta, Georgia. And I have his signature on a credit card, photocopy of the little receipt the credit card machine prints out. It was paid with a Vista card, I believe. No, they actually blacked that out, so you can't see the name of the card. But there's an authorization number, sale amount, etc. His wife writes, I've been unable to reach my husband, Raymond, all day. This is the day she reported him missing on 6:30. All right, he left work early this morning at approximately 5:15 a.m. told me he loved me and that he'd call me later. He had a meeting at work, and then after that she couldn't contact him. So the police report states that Lem's watch stopped at 12:34 on June the 30th. You see, the timeline is so confusing on this. In other words, the watch stopped prior to his leaving home at 5:15 a.m. is what they're trying to say here. When Childress, the detective in Valdosta, was first asked about the problems with the dates, he said, "Yeah, well, there was a question about the dates, and we were told by the management the hotel made a mistake. It's either that or it's an error on the credit card machine or some other error." In other words, that was a quote, by the way. The call was recorded. This is all in quotes. His comment that was made during the first call before he had a chance to pull the file to refresh his memory, of course. And so some more information about credit card machines not losing the correct time. And they call back. Brad Blog called back and checked with the credit card processor, and the processor assured them all times are correct. And despite all of these inconsistencies, it was all closed. So anyway, Brad Blog called him back again, and the officer said to him, "I've talked to my chief about this. We've looked at everything about this case, the allegations on the internet about him not committing suicide. It was suicide, and that's all we're going to say. The media's blown this out of proportion." He said, "I'm getting tons of questions about the case. We investigated like any other case. Nothing found that would indicate that he was not murdered." I mean, not it was not a, that it was murder, rather. And said, "I don't want to be short with you or stonewalling you, but I'm tired of answering these questions." Now, I can go on and on. There's pictures of the towel. There's pictures of the belt. There's description in detail of more and more information, information about the family. This is investigated in great detail. But the mainstream media, mind you, shut this up very tightly, just as well as that phone call from Florida shut down the investigation very, very tightly and very quickly. Now, why do I bring all this up from 2004? Well, simply because one of the murdered men in that apartment in Orlando, Gonzalez, okay, he and his lover lived together. Okay. They were supposed to be murdered by a guy named Drake. But in any case, Gonzalez is very close with Tom Feeney. Now, Drake, it is being reported, is threatening to out people who are showing up at a male escort service and who are on the record, sort of like the DC Madam thing, of a North Carolina, or no, a Virginia-based male escort service. It would seem to me that a man with as much power as Feeney has, if he was in the least concerned about his name also being on that list and being outed, in the least way, that he had demonstrated to himself before, he can have people eliminated and investigations closed with very little effort whatsoever. So why should Tom Feeney worry about offing three gay guys in an apartment in Miami? Do I have proof of that? Of course not. Will we ever? I doubt it. The mainstream media won't touch this story with a 10-foot pole. They will not touch it. But there's just something about this situation in Orlando with these three dead guys and their connections to Max Cleland, to Tom Feeney, to a whole Jack Abramoff. They're connected in so many ways. And Feeney personally, like, raves about Gonzalez. And Gonzalez is out to his friends. Feeney knows he's gay. There's nothing, you know, all these people are, you know, as tight as thieves, as you might want to say. It just seems to me that there may very well be a lot more to this. And I think Brad Blog, it's not me that demonstrated that. Brad Blog did that research. I just shared it with you. And you can locate it at bradblog.com. They're posting it in the chat room. They located the link. Thank you. And but that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Yes, that is my story, and I am sticking to it, and it is what? 9:34 p.m., so I think we should do a bottom-of-the-hour break. And so as we go into the break, this is Peter Godbold. You're listening to Strictly Confidential. I'm glad you could join us tonight. 877, the number 4, head on.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do?
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Yeah, my name is
Join me this Friday on Foxed Up with John Fox at 10 a.m. Eastern. We'll take a trip back to the fall of 1974 when John Lennon sat behind the mic at WNEW-FM New York to promote his newly released album, Walls and Bridges. It's classic Lennon taking liberties with commercials.
Listen to this. Playcart C1. Pierre Boulez's album, The Rites of Spring, spelled R-I-G-H-T-S. Very subtle.
And he even does the weather.
All right. We're not going to bother with the weather. Just look out of the window.
Plus, you'll find out which tune Lennon and McCartney wrote for another famous band. This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Hi, I'm V.
And I'm John.
And we're from FIERCE, a community organization for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer-questioning youth of color in New York City.
For many years, the Cushion for Sheep here has been a place for our community, a space where we could all go and be ourselves.
A space where healthcare providers can come and provide free HIV testing and information to other services.
However, these services and safe space are being threatened.
To become a member of FIERCE and help keep our Christopher Pierce safe for queer and trans people, contact us at 646-336-6789 or visit our website at fiercenyc.org.
And we're back. The toll-free number is 877, the number 4, head on. If you have unlimited long distance, use 304-658-3333. We would appreciate it. Mail arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and the website is strictlyconfidentialradio.com. And it just occurred to me, I live only 20 miles from Tallahassee. If I disappear, feel free to let Brad Blog know. I would very much appreciate it. You know, just prior to the show, our dear friend Lottie in chat sent me an email with an article in it written by a Bishop Shelby Spong. I've got to have this guy on the show. If I have to track him down, I'm going to find this man. If I have to beg and plead, if I have to send him boxes of Cheerios, I will do it, whatever it takes. He wrote an amazing article here. I'm only going to share with you a little bit of the first paragraph to give you an idea where Lottie got this, I don't know. I don't know about this man, but Lottie comes up with some great stuff. He says, if Christianity cannot change, it will die. He says that Christianity as a religion of certainty and control is dying. The signs of that death are present in the emptiness of the churches in Europe, in the decline of candidates for the priesthood in the Roman Catholic Church, in the increasing obsession about issues of sexuality that bedevil the church leaders, in the rising secularization of our society. It's also seen in the hysterical fundamentalists, praise the Lord, that mark the conservative evangelicals and Catholics alike in the world today. He says that fundamentalism is not a virtue. It is a sign of being out of touch with reality. Praise God, this man is talking about the elephant in the room. This is, oh, Jesus. I got to talk to this guy. Just amazing to me. Christianity, he says, is not dying because people are abandoning revealed truth, as the conservatives are saying. It's dying because three major concepts that were once called revealed are no longer credible. And those concepts are Christianity's definition of God, Christianity's definition of human life, and Christianity's understanding of life after death. And he says in this week's column, I'm going to examine those concepts, and he does. But I would rather him be on the show than, and I don't know all the information well enough to really share it with you. Just amazing. Help me find him, Lottie. I would love to talk to that guy. Oh, amazing. Oh, I also made a phone call today. One of our listeners in Illinois referred me to Gleason. It's actually an abbreviation. It's G-L-S-E-N. It stands for the, I have it right here, Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network. And they play an integral role, an integrated role in mitigating negative impact of bullying and harassment on lesbians and gays and bisexuals and transgendered in schools, in your regular old everyday mommy do I have to go to school today kind of schools. As of today, there's like 3,600 GSA chapters. There's lots of details here. There have been four findings in this, and that is that the presence of a GSA makes a school safer for LGBT students, that they attend classes more often because they feel safer, that there is a far less reports of hearing homophobic remarks like faggot and dyke in school on a daily basis in schools that have a gay, lesbian, straight alliance. And this organization was founded, by the way, by a straight man, a teacher, quite a few years back. I'm looking for the reference on that. Don't see it. But these are things we can ask them on the air. I phoned them today. I didn't bother to email them. I thought this was great. It's a great reference from our listener in Illinois. And so I phoned them. I got through the media guy who was out of the office and said, you know, please leave a message or call me on the cell phone. And I figured he's probably driving in traffic, and I didn't want to call him. So I've just left a message about the show and the site. Hopefully he is listening this evening. If you are, sir, I would love to have you on the show. Certainly would. You know, there was something, too, that happened in North Carolina today, or actually just last Friday. A gay man made history. And what I couldn't wrap my head around on this story was how quiet it was. It's really astounding, but at the same time, it's like there's no controversy. The fundies are protesting and marching around. Nobody's going insane. Fire and brimstone are not falling from the sky on the state of North Carolina. What it was is the governor appointed a special Superior Court judge named John Arrowwood to the North Carolina Court of Appeals, and he's gay. Not the governor, the judge. He's an openly gay judge, and everybody knows it. He doesn't hide it at all. And his resume is the envy of most lawyers, it says here. It's his list of accomplishments and credits is just astounding. But nobody's talking about the fact he's gay. It's just very, very quiet. It just, you know, and what's astounded me about this article is that's the way it ought to be. Is this the future? Am I reading an article from the future where a gay man can be appointed to being a superior court judge in a state in the United States? And there's not, you know, everybody screaming and raising hell. Surely the American Family Association just hasn't found this yet. Maybe that's it. It's either I'm living 100 years in the future, or they just haven't found it yet. But so way to go, North Carolina. Got a surreal judge with a long list of credentials. They know, it's interesting, so the entire everybody knows, though. But Governor Mike, the governor's office says that he didn't know about Arrowood's orientation. He doesn't care. He didn't know. Oh, honey, everybody knew. Everybody knows. Not a secret. Not at all a secret. But then he says, I guess he had to do that for, you know, political reasons. I didn't know or didn't care. I'm sure he did know, but didn't care. That's probably really what the truth is. He just says that Arrowood's a fantastic judge, and we are fortunate to have him serving in North Carolina. So, way to go, North Carolina. That's a wonderful story. I am going to run a little bit of music tonight. I have a couple of requests, and I have a dance track. All of them are wonderful. And I have some music set in, too, by pair of our dear listeners in Columbus, Ohio, Michael and Jen. Michael and his wife, Jen, and then some Rufus Wainwright. If you recall, Matt Gold was with us on the show a few weeks ago, and Matt was saying that he was almost signed, but the record company said, we already signed you. In other words, Matt, they're equating him to Rufus Wainwright, and Matt's style is something like Rufus Wainwright and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, you know, I had this huge missing period of time. I'm the sort of person that walks around with multiple personalities. So I have this huge. So really, I didn't know much about Rufus Wainwright, and they were Michael and Jen were very gracious to send a CD of some music. And I'll tell you what, we'll do the Michael Wainwright one since I'm already into it. We'll do that track first. And what's so interesting about this is that Michael took the time to write a commentary. It's mixed in with, you know, things about the show and this, that, and the other, and personal things about himself. He considers himself to be recovering Catholic, much in the way Bob calls himself a recovering Southern Baptist. It's a great letter, but this song is called, it's a track called Gay Messiah by Rufus Wainwright. And Michael is saying in the letter that it's his nature to gravitate toward protest music. And so naturally he, you know, starts off the compendium with protest songs. And the first song is Gay Messiah. And he says it's fairly simple tune, and it sounds innocent enough to you examine the lyrics closely. And when you do that, you realize that, oh, my God, he did say that. And he didn't say, oh, my God, I threw that in. But you realize that, yeah, he did say that. There are a few instances of wordplay, Michael says, in the song that some people might consider lewd. And it's packaged all together with a generous helping of messianic imagery. And you get a song like that, it mixes sacred and profane, and you have something like that, you get a controversy like Madonna videos and chocolate Jesuses. It's well done. He says, to me, there's a wonderful thing about the chorus. The chorus goes, better pray for your sins because the gay Messiah is coming. Interesting chorus. He says that with those two simple lines of lyrics, the conservative fake Christian's notion of sin, it just sets it right on its head. It's a very powerful statement. In fact, he's right. I think I need to sick our man Billy Shears on Michael. That's what I think I need to do. If Michael can write like this, Michael points out, too, in the song that there's allusion to John, because there's a lyric that goes, Rufus the Baptist I be, Rufus Wainwright rather than John the Baptist. He's very observant. So anyway, I'm going to sick Billy Shears on him. I think that Michael needs to be. They're posting some of these things on the Billy Shears site, is what I think. And before we actually play that track, I tell you, we have a caller on the line. But we'll be after we'll run that as our first track of night, Gay Messiah. After we take caller Kate, who is on the road somewhere in the middle of where are you, Kate? Welcome to the show.
I'm in Flagstaff, Arizona. I don't want to interrupt your. You just did this big build up to your musical piece, and then you get me.
honey, you. But you're a real live lesbian with a chainsaw. I'm a steered.
A chainsaw and what?
A real live lesbian with a chainsaw, and I'm scared. Scared.
Well, I thought you said, and a beard. I thought, no.
Oh, no, no, no,
I,
no.
No, 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 no. God, how are you, darling?
I'm doing fine. I have had a fairly normal day. Nobody died. And it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool. I had an interesting experience at the doctor's office this morning. It was not anything major. It's just my 30,000-mile checkup. Doggy decided to hop out of the car. She goes with me everywhere. The windows are always down.
Yeah, right.
And she waits
right.
But she decided I'd been in there long enough. She never does this. She hopped out of the car and went up to the – apparently she waited by the doctor's office door until somebody – went in and she scooted in there. She managed to make it past the nurse's station and down the hall until she found me. Oh my God!
Oh my God!
She's obsessed, such a devoted sweet doggy, and I had to take her back out the car. It was too funny. You just don't expect to see dogs in the I mean, the vet's office. That's one thing. But
oh my God, that's funny.
She's
well,
crafty.
You said, is it getting cooler down there?
In Florida, yes.
Mm-hmm.
The temperature, it's, well, today it seemed kind of hot. At the, I think the perceived temperature was like 94 or something, but really it was only like 88 or 89. So, yes, in, Frank, in fact, it is getting cooler.
Good, good. I left yesterday after, last night about 6 o'clock, and, it was 99 degrees when I was coming through Phoenix, and I thought, oh, God, have mercy. And I wanted to get to 7,000 feet so badly. So I was thinking, what do I need to do to distract myself? I want to call every once in a while. And what was the happiest thing I had today? That was getting to the top of the ridge where I needed to put my sweatshirt on. It was 7,000. And then last night it got down to about 46 degrees. And so
I heard you say that on Bob's show. I was thrilled. I thought that just sounds like heaven. Oh,
it
man.
Is. I'm sleeping in my sleeping bag. You don't know how wonderful that is. Oh, my God. And I was, God, there was something else, too. I wanted to write it down. No, let me look. I wrote it down. Anyway, I didn't know if you had a guest tonight, so I didn't know when to call in. And I'm trying intentionally to stay away from the news and all the junk that's going on. I'm just staring I'm going to go farther north now and wind up in Utah somewhere on top of a mountain tomorrow and heading on to Montana and spend the time there until... So somebody said, where are you going? I said, Mississippi. And they said, why are you up here? And I said, well, because it's on the way.
Yeah, well, that might work.
Montana, kind of. It's kind of on the way. It's about 1,500 miles out of the way, but, you know, not my way. And one of the saddest things I saw on that I experienced on the trip was that when I fueled up the first time, our gas down in Phoenix was $2.55 a gallon, and diesel was $2.88. And I feel so embarrassed when I have to pay less for unleaded than the truckers do for diesel. God, it's awful
shame.
Out here. It's awful out here. It's just terrible. So, you know, the trucks are still running, but God, it's who knows? I mean, it's getting ugly out here. The big. Headline above the fold in the Arizona Republic today I saw was the housing debacle is they're saying it's way worse than we thought it was going to be, and when I thought, my God, front page above the fold, that's something.
Yeah, it's apparently melting down quite badly, and the Fed is supposed to be lowering interest rates, but the indication is that I'm hearing is that that's not going to mean any more money gets loaned. The bankers are already feel that they're overextended. So the fact that the money's cheaper doesn't mean they're going to get any more of it out.
No. There's no way out of this. There is no way out of it. They dug themselves in way deep, and that's why I don't own a house. Another thing that it dawned on me as I was thinking about what would I talk about tonight if I got to call in was that one of the things that amuses me a great deal is to view my culture through the eyes of somebody else from not from here. And I've had the opportunity several times to explain my culture and my society and my geography to my friend from Sofia, Bulgaria, and my friend from Poznan, Poland, and from people from Eastern Europe. You just try to explain what that means. What does that mean? What? And they used to say, this means what? What? The sign, like the sign down in Washington that says beach access. Big brown sign, you know, beach access to the left, no water.
Oh, yeah.
So on my trip, I'm trying to, because it's going to be a long one from now until the time I get down to hurricane country, I'm just trying to find the prettiest and the saddest and the funniest thing on the trip, and I wanted to do little postcards from the road and... And
oh, how cool is that? That's a great idea.
Well, yeah, I have a
scanner, so...
Call in with what happened and what's going on out here and, you know, little verbal postcards from the road. And, there was one other thing. I can't remember what it was.
Come back to you.
The big news
yes.
Is that I logged on to my computer today with my Verizon broadband thing and sitting in the Walmart parking lot in Flagstaff, and
yes.
It just bumped right in there and it went bang right up, and it came up so fast I didn't even get a chance to light a cigarette waiting on it to load. It doesn't, the buffer gets full, boom, it doesn't jump, it doesn't I have
that's
a real computer.
That's wonderful. You are on this side of the digital divide. That's great news. I mean, you're just
I'm
terrible.
I'm a digital diva now.
Yes,
and
you are. Yeah,
my Verizon phone, huh?
I was just going to say, the storms, you won't get, like, dust in your mouth when you're trying to find a bar. The advantages are huge. Well, it happened. It happened on my show.
I remember. That's funny. Yeah,
Agnes is going, take the call, there's a storm coming up. I'm going, blah, 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 and notice, like, you know.
Oh my God! And I sit and listen to. I mean, I just log. I mean, I don't ever miss your show, even if it's a rerun. And sometimes it's one that I maybe call in. And I think, oh my God, I'm so good. That's so. Oh Jesus! Like, but I'm always in a hurry because I'm afraid the phone's going to hang up. And you know, I sound so ridiculous. I wish I could redo some of those little interview things that we do, the little call-in things. So, anyway, I just want to let you go. You did a good build-up for that music, and I'm going to miss being on the... I'm thinking that I'm going to go find an electronics store, and I don't know how Alan does it from his truck, but I think what I can do is get one of those, whatever, you plug it into the cigarette lighter, and then it transforms the power to the laptop, whatever they're called. What do you call that?
Yes, it's a cigarette lighter adapter, and your best bet is probably to pick up one of those at a computer store, because different laptops require different voltages, and probably a computer store. Yeah, there's a company called Curtis, I think, that makes like a universal one. It may be that Walmart would have, but be sure you get one that is designed for a laptop, not one that's just designed as, you know, your regular cigarette lighter adapter. Get one that's designed for a laptop, so I don't want you to hurt it.
You know, no, I have looked at some of them, but they run about $40 or $50, and I thought it'd be okay if I use my donation for September to get an adapter so I can listen to my laptop in the truck. I'll double up in October.
Kate, I insist on it, honey. And in fact, if you send the donation, I'll make them send it back.
Yeah, but I thought I listened to the first few minutes of prayer meeting tonight to see, you know, if it was alive and whatever, and it was so cool sitting here in the truck with the buffer's not puking, and you know, it's not going dormant, and it's not reloading, and it's, you know, oh God, and I'm running on 48K instead of that little 16 thing that Sue sent me, and you know, I felt like a real person. I got just so excited, and I thought, ooh, I'm going to run and go buy one of those things right now. So, but anyway, I don't know.
Wonderful.
I don't know where I get it. I'm leaving here and going up to North North Grand Canyon, the north rim of the Grand Canyon and up through. And I'm going to be in Utah and Idaho for the next few days, and so if I'm high enough, there won't be any, like sometimes there's no cell phone reception. So,
well, listen, does your car have a cassette player?
Yes, it does.
Excellent. Well, you can get one of those little adapters. You plug the plug into your earphone jack on the laptop, and the other end looks like a cassette, except the wire runs to it. And you just plug it in and you hear the laptop through your car speakers, which will be much louder than the laptop can play, and it'll overcome road noise.
Oh,
it's called a cassette adapter.
I don't have a jack on my radio.
Not necessary. See one end of it plugs into the laptop into a headphone jack, and the other end of it is a cassette. Except there's really not a cassette. It's something that tricks the cassette player into believing it's a cassette, and so what it actually picks up is the sound from the laptop.
Oh, I see. It's in a little. It's a little extra piece that fits in the slot.
Yes, exactly. And they're not expensive. They're only like 10 or 12, maybe 15 bucks. And it's no.
Okay.
It's no.
So then I can travel. That's how Alan can drive and listen at the same time, huh?
Yeah. I would bet so, because road noise will beat up a laptop anytime. You know, you won't be able to, you can't play them that loud. And by the way, I need to tell you that Fancy Free from Main Chat needs me to tell you, she says, please tell Kate that she is taking the scenic route. And I completely agree. That's what you're doing.
She knows I'm going. I'm probably going to go up to Escalante or over to Cedar Breaks, and that's very, very, very scenic. I've done this before, but I'm taking some gray roads and some red roads that I've never been on before. So they used to call it blue highways, but now they're all red in the Atlas, so I'm on the red road, which just fits right in with my spirituality. So I thought of that this morning. Oh, get back on that red road. But it was so nice in Flagstaff today. I just thought I'd sit in the parking lot and read books and just stare and have another real cool night. Crawling.
I don't blame you a bit. I don't blame you a bit.
Anyway.
You've been trapped in that and the heat and the storms, and where you're headed, it's nothing going to be nothing but hard work. I'd stick around for a few days too.
It was very hard work. Not caregiving my friend, but just hard work trying to stay human and civil and peaceful and very stressful and so I'm glad to be up out of the desert, and I don't want to go back very time soon. So anyway, my love to everybody in the chat room and everybody. I'll be back in the chat room when I can get there. So I'm glad that you're well and that everyone is and that you're doing okay. So take care of yourself, and I'll check in again from on up the road or on down the road, whichever.
Please do. It's always good to hear from you, Kate.
With my next little installment of Postcards from the Road.
Okay. Thank you.
Talk to you later, darling. Love you.
Yes, ma'am. Good night. And that was our friend Kate, who is somewhere on a mountain, somewhere in near Flagstaff. I've been to Flagstaff, by the way. It's been a long time ago. It's a pretty cool place. I liked it. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We are going to run that track a little bit later, and I'll reintroduce it. What we will do now is we will go to the 2 minutes after top of the hour news break. And so this is Peter Godbold, Strictly Confidential. Thank you for joining us. Be back in a minute.
On the wings of the wind, let me hear your sweet voice saying, you love me again. Even though we're apart, I still hold your memory. Send a message to my heart to keep you here with me.
This is the Quality News Network. Congressional Democrats are rejecting a proposal made by the top U.S. commander in Iraq to withdraw 30,000 U.S. troops in Iraq by summer of 2008. Senate Majority Whip Harry Reid of Nevada says the proposal laid out Monday on Capitol Hill by General David Petraeus does not go far enough and is unacceptable to him and to the American people. Democratic leaders are outlining legislation to try and limit U.S. involvement in Iraq. General Petraeus spoke at the National Press Club today after 2 days of congressional testimony. Petraeus told members that Iranian insurgents in Iraq are posing a danger and undermining efforts to stabilize the country. Two powerful congressional Democrats also say they'll oppose the nomination of former Solicitor General Ted Olson to be the next U.S. Attorney General. Senators Patrick Leahy and Harry Reid both say Olson would be a poor choice to replace outgoing Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. Russian President Vladimir Putin unexpectedly appointed a new Russian premier and cabinet today. Putin's second term in office ends next year, and he cannot run for a third term. Some political analysts say Putin's nomination of Viktor Zubkov is his way of ensuring he can still run the country after leaving office. Meantime, the Russian military has successfully tested what it described as the world's most powerful non-nuclear air-delivered bomb, according to Russian state television reports. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe announced his resignation today at a news conference in Tokyo. Abe's 1 year in office has been racked with scandal. At least 5 people are dead in the wake of an 8.4 magnitude earthquake which struck off the coast of Indonesia's Sumatra's island earlier today. Just hours later, a strong second earthquake, not an aftershock, near Jakarta, measured 7.7 in magnitude. Rescue teams from the UN are en route to Sumatra to help aid victims and assess the damage. A new tsunami warning has been issued by the Indonesian government. Tropical storm Humberto formed rapidly off the coast of Texas today, winds clocking at 55 miles per hour. Humberto is expected to reach Texas landfall near Galveston later tonight, packing a punch. You're listening to the Quality News Network. A look at science and business news is just ahead. Now this message.
It won't be long before every business and most individuals will have their own website. Whether they are looking for new clients or posting information of use to their colleagues, the website makes printing brochures and price sheets, press releases, and community notices virtually obsolete. With your own website, you can provide the latest information as it becomes available on new products and services, special offers, and company news. You no longer have to stare at errors or out-of-date information that was printed up in bulk. For organizations, you can bring your message to the public, just as you are knitting tighter relations with your supporters and staff. The people who can make all of that possible are at Byte Technology. Find out more. Byte Technology. See the difference at byte-technology.com or call 831-656-9178. Byte Technology, 656-9178.
Scientists today are monitoring a journey into a crater on the red planet by a Mars robotic rover. NASA says the crater the rover Opportunity will study may enlighten researchers about Mars climate eons ago. A federal judge in New York City has rejected a new municipal law forcing fast food restaurants to publish calorie counts on menus. However, the judge said if the number and type of restaurants covered under the law were expanded, the regulation may be considered legal. Reports of successful trials for lung cancer drug Erbitux sent shares of pharmaceutical company Merck up nearly 6% and biotech company ImClone soaring nearly 24%. The Associated Press says a review of census information shows that the price of housing has increased since 1990, but Americans' paychecks have not. That widening breach, as well as artificially low interest rates, has led to a downturn in the U.S. housing market. Texas Instruments issued an optimistic prediction for its quarterly earnings, announcing it expects to end up on the high side of its revenue forecast. Currently, light sweet crude trading at $79.91 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Despite OPEC's promise of modestly increased oil production for the coming winter, light sweet crude traded at an all-time high today at $80 a barrel for the first time. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average finished down 17 points. There's more on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
And he's back, riding across America on a horse named Strictly Confidential, a man who knows his way around a pair of chaps. Here's your host, Peter Godbold.
And we're back. We're back for hour two of this crazy little thing called love that we formally call Strictly Confidential. The telephone number is 877, the number 4, head on. Or if you have unlimited long distance, 304-658-3333. That rings in West Virginia. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. I want to tell you a little bit about tomorrow night's guest. Tomorrow night we have an international recording star. He has 17 consecutive top 10 dance singles, and six of those have gone to number one. His name is Ernest Cole. He does have a couple of site links. If you'll stop by strictlyconfidentialradio.com, just scroll down to the calendar and look for tomorrow's date, which would be the 13th, and you can click on his name in the calendar date and find out more about him. I'm looking forward to having Ernest Cole on the show. Ernest will be a great guest, no doubt, simply because Ernest was recommended by our dear friend Glenn Rivera, the world's most fabulous DJ from California. San Diego, to be precise. I'm going to do a little story here. We'll play the Rufus Wainwright in just a second. And it's a story that has been shuffled around in my papers for at least a couple of weeks, and it's something I wanted to do a while back. It's not a very long story, but it's something that definitely needs to be told because it's just outrageous. In fact, I believe some of our news ninjas, I don't remember which one, but at least one of our news ninjas has posted this on the headonradionetwork.com site in the news section. We have yes, I should point that out more often. The main radio network site is headonradionetwork.com. Of course, Strictly Confidential Radio is just a member of the Head On Radio Network, and without the Head On Radio Network and Ben Birch at the White Rose Society, this show and the others, we just would not exist. This particular program, this particular article, if you've heard it, you'll know what I mean when I say it's just about the most disgusting thing I've heard in a long time. It's about a megachurch. Surprise, surprise. Anybody surprised to hear it's about a megachurch? Well, they canceled a memorial service for a Navy veteran. 24 hours because it was, 24 hours notice. 24 hours before the memorial service. The man's dead. They've arranged it with the family. 24 hours before the service, they canceled it because the deceased man was gay. Officials at the non-denominational High Point Church, yes, that's a high point, all right, they knew that Cecil Howard Sinclair was gay when they offered to host the service. His sister said that, Kathleen Wright. And his sister's not going to lie about that. But after his obituary in the newspaper listed his life partner as one of the survivors, they called it off. It's a slap in the face. She says that it's at least that. Kathleen, it just breaks my heart that a church could do this. Unbelievable. He served in the first Gulf War, and he died at age 46 from an infection after surgery to prepare him for a heart transplant. Now, the church pastor, the church is lying. Can you believe that? Are you surprised at all? Is anybody surprised anymore? The Reverend Gary Sims said, nobody knew Sinclair was gay until the day before the Thursday service, and the staff members were putting together a video tribute. You see, mega churches are big on video. They spend a lot of money on video. They spend a lot of money on high power, pump out the volume audio equipment. Yes, they do. If the Holy Spirit does not move through the room, they will simulate it for you with big bass and multimedia all over the place. They will take you on a trip for God. I'll tell you what, it's not internal at the mega churches, honey. It is an external event. It is surround sound. I'm sorry, I'll stop. They were putting together the video tribute, and they saw, quote, pictures of these men, quote, engaging in clear affection, kissing and embracing. Well, even if that were true, that's so laughable. Clear affection. We're not going to have your service because you are engaging in clear affection. It's an absolute lie, you see, because his sister, Kathleen Wright, had provided the church with every bit of the material for the video they were preparing. She provided them with all of the pictures that were going to go into the video.
There were no pictures. There were pictures where they were standing beside each other in the same photograph, but in no case were there any sort of. In other words, she was keeping it on the low. She was, you know, nothing, you know, to upset the church members. So there was no kissing, no embracing, just like the pastor said. She provided the pictures. She would know. So the preacher says that the church believes homosexuality is a sin. It would have appeared to endorse that lifestyle. Oh, you jackass. The service had been held there. A Navy vet. We declined the service not based on hatred, not based on discrimination, but based on principle. And had we known on the day the family talked about it, we would have declined them. Lord have mercy. It's hard to imagine, isn't it? Yes. And everybody, you know, the vets, I got another vet story here. We'll do that one next. But first we're going to hear from Jim. Welcome to the show, Jim.
Good evening, Peter. How are you?
I'm fine and dandy. It's so nice to hear from you, sir.
Thank you. It's so nice to hear your voice. You sound like you feel a lot better, and I hope you had a good night's sleep last night.
Well, you know, it was funny. I did do the sort of toss and turn bit till about 2:30 or 3, but boy, I went to sleep really soundly after that. I did have to get up and leave a little early for my appointment this morning, but that's okay. I am so much better than last night. Last night, I was just following around behind the... I'm looking at the lights and my eyes would sort of blur. You know, it's just, I'm much better. Thank you, Jim.
Well, you know, after listening to all of my psychobabble, it's a wonder it didn't send you over the edge.
Oh, I thought about that today. That was such a wonderful conversation. I laughed about the drapes and the magnolias all day.
Well, right now I'm sitting here waiting for Dr. Drew and Cousin Miriam to come to make me leave the plantation and learn how to... make little things out of wicker, you know.
Oh, that's funny. Oh, that's funny. Yes, if you're going to be a demented Southern belle, you need to go for it full tilt, basket weaving and everything.
Right. You know, I suffer from PST, post-traumatic stress, and I don't want to get into that. But sometimes I had some horrific nightmares. And I know what it's like to go through some of that stuff. And it isn't very pleasant, but you try to just move on through it, you know?
Yeah, life is a challenge, isn't it? Sometimes I believe that it's just the whole point of life is just to get through it as quickly as possible.
Well, but not too quickly. But it's always good to hear from Kate. She's always appears to have joie de vivre and... You know, it's wonderful. She's going to Montana, right?
Well, actually, the final destination is Mississippi to work on the hurricane damage again. But right now, she's just wandering in some sort of middle zone between the two responsibilities. And right now, she's in Arizona. But I think she said she might go to Montana.
Well, going to Montana soon to be a dental floss tycoon, raising up and waxing it down. And riding on my painted pony with my zirconium-encrusted tweezers.
Oh, jeez.
Best I can. Remember that?
No, honey, I don't, but it's just wonderful, but I don't know it until now I know it. What is that from?
Frank Zappa.
Oh, I see. That was back probably in the days I don't remember too much.
I remember all too clearly. The trouble is I just can't forget anything. That's my problem.
Oh, I see. I have a lot of lost moments here and there. But I remember Susie Cream Cheese and some of the other...
And Dynamo Hum.
Oh, yeah.
And I even went to see one of his movies called 200 Motels, and I said, well, I don't know where I've been and what I'm doing here when I saw that movie. Altered States, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was a great flick, too.
But anyway, you know, she's always so bright and bubbly, and it's always good to hear from her. I enjoy listening to her very much.
She's a kind spirit.
Absolutely.
She told me once that she described her life as rounding up strays. I thought that was a wonderful image. You know, like people, she means people, just sort of looking for the ones that are hanging out by the fence. You know, a helper. I thought it was a wonderful way to put your life, to describe it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Got to be careful these days, so you don't want to round up Mr. Goodbar. That's
your yeah.
I could tell you about that one.
Yeah.
That movie. Lord have mercy.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm just sitting here having a few drinks and watching The Shady Lady and Rupert Brooke loll about on their favorite spot.
Oh, God, we need some video. We need some video. I think
you know,
we need some.
You could see this house. You would just, well, it's well organized, but it's just so much stuff. And it's just like it is a pictorial representation of the state of my mind.
Oh, my God.
And it's just a collection of a lot of stuff. And it makes me feel very comfortable because I'm not able to travel too much now. The Lord knows I certainly did enough traveling for the Air Force and stuff like that. So, you know, I've been there. I've been to places I wanted to go, and I've done the things I wanted to do, so I don't feel so bad. And I feel like God's been good.
Well, that's great. That's a positive thing, Jim. And,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And, I just want to tell you a funny story if you want to listen to one of my crazy stories. If not,
I do.
Okay.
I do. And the kitty cats are Southern Belles, too. By the way, the names.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know about that because Rupert Brooke weighed in at 28 pounds yesterday.
Yes.
He is quite a fella. And he came to me via the patio door on his last leg. So luckily, he's well and safe, and I'm glad that the good Lord sent him to me. I really am. But
that's
going to the
wonderful
story, I had these friends back in the 70s, Bob and John. And they were two college professors. One worked at Columbia, one worked at Orangeburg, South Carolina. And they lived equidistant between the two cities. And they had a place in the country. And John's brother had this, John had a brother named Linville, we'll call him Linville, okay? And he had an aunt named Florence. And John was always teasing his Aunt Florence terribly. She was in her 80s, and he would take her to the doctor and stuff. And one night, Florence called me, and she said, Jim, and I said, Miss Florence? And she said, I need to ask you about something. I said, what is it? Well, John's taking me to the doctor tomorrow, and they're going to give me the water test.
Okay.
Said, what on earth is that? And she said, I don't know, but I'm going to let you know what happens, but it just sounds absolutely medieval. And then she got
medieval
on the phone. And I said, the world I called John. I said, John, what are you telling your aunt? And he said, well, I told her that I'm taking her to the doctor, and he had already said that they're going to have to give her the water test, which entailed her being put in a paper dress and put on a wheel and turned upside down and given a gallon and a half of hot, soapy water in her colon to test the plasticity. And this poor woman believed it, and she went in there the next day and just demanded to see the doctor, interrupting the whole regime of that office, and said, I am not taking the water test. And the doctor finally came out and said, Miss Brown, what's the problem? She said, you are not putting me on top of any wheel and giving me an enema and putting a gallon and a half in me. That is just medieval. It sounds like something from a Boris Karloff movie.
It does, with the lightning and the thunder and the bolt. Throw the switch.
And I said, John, you've got to stop teasing your aunt that way. I said, it's terrible. And the poor thing had to go to the same doctor, and she had back problems. Now, this woman was a spinster, never been married, taught school for 48 years, and basically was just that. She was Miss Florence. And he had told her that the doctor had already diagnosed her, and he said the reason her back was giving her problems was because she was too sexually active.
How old was she again?
86.
Oh, dear Lord.
So she goes into that office, and she tells that doctor, I am sick and tired of your conversations with my nephew, and I am not sexually active. I've never even been married, and I'm a virgin.
Oh, Jesus, she didn't go that far.
She did. Poor thing, I mean. You know, it got to the point that the doctor thought she was going into some stage of dementia.
Yes, all Southern people are at some stage of dementia.
But the tricks they used to play on that woman are just you know, bless her heart, she's no longer with us, but she would call me up and she said, "What do you think about these people?" And I said, "I really don't know what to say." I said, "I really don't know." And she said, "Well, let me ask you something." And I said, "Well, what is it, Miss Lawrence?" And she said, "Didn't you teach history at one time?" And I said, "Yeah, I did, part of my checkered past." And she said, "Well, did you ever teach South Carolina history?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "Is it true that the state bird of South Carolina is the red-bellied cocksucker?"
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, oh, she was serious. She was serious. And I said, "Yeah, Florence, I believe it is." And I said, "As a matter of fact, if you look down the road towards where they lived," I said, "I think you've got two of them living down there right now."
Oh, Jesus. Oh, that's so funny. That is too funny. Oh, Lord, I wonder who told her that. You think they told her that?
Of course they did. They said, "Call him, he'll tell you."
That's priceless.
Anyway, so that's just part of the book that I'm putting together. And I thought I would just share that with you. It's just an addendum to the dialogue for tonight's story. And hey, be careful of that story down there. I know you're sticking by it, but be sure it doesn't stick to you, because, you know, in today's world, my friend, nothing really is. And they say this, they'll tell you this in Wyoming, Virginia, at CIA. Nothing is what it appears to be.
Good point. Yet perception is survival, and sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah, we've got some pretty mean people out there, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a real funny thing, because I knew a friend of mine who worked off personnel management in Raleigh, and I think I told you this. He's State Kathleen Harris. He's from Tallahassee.
Oh, God. The mascara stains alone would scare me from Catherine Harris.
Well, I just said, "Lord have mercy, how did you stand it?" And he said, "Well," he said, "in those days," and I let it go at that. And he said, "Yeah, you used to date her." I said, "Oh, Lord, that horrible woman." But anyway, I'm glad you're feeling better, and I'm glad your dog was loyal enough to go in there and seek you out.
Yes, she came in. If she could have put on a little nurse hat, she would have.
Well, you know, when I lived in D.C., I had to take my cat to the vet for shots, and it was on a Saturday morning after a Friday night of being up a part-time wasting, having too much fun, and oh, I did have a hangover. Good Lord. This hangover was historic, and to be sitting in this room with all these people
yeah.
and all these animals just going nuts. And so I was like number 30 to be seen. And so they called me to the window, and I filled out the form. It's my initial office visit, or IOV as they call it. So I filled it out, and I looked at the woman, and I said, "Ma'am, there's no place on this form for his religion." And the
yeah.
woman behind the counter said, "Excuse me?" I said, "There is no place on this form for my cat's religion." She said, "You just write it down there by where you sign." And the form. And so they took me right away above everybody else. And I could hear them say, "That man's crazy."
I imagine that. Imagine that. You're such a veterinarian.
"May I ask you what you do for the government?" And I said,
"Oh, good question. Good, good."
And I said, "If I told you, I may have to kill you." And she just said, "Okay." And I
okay.
said, "By the way," he was just taking to the National Cathedral, because it's right around St. Francis Day, and I used to take him up there to be blessed by the dean of the cathedral. And it was a good way to get out of the vet's office real quick on a Saturday morning when, you know, you've got all types of things rolling around inside your head. So ends my psychobabble for tonight.
Well, I have thoroughly enjoyed it. The South Carolina state bird alone will keep me up for a while after the show.
Honestly and truly, when that phone would ring and she'd get on that line and she'd ask me all these questions and stuff, and I said, "Good Lord," and but I must say she took it all in its good stride. That's for sure.
Apparently so.
me get off this line and let you get on with your program. Glad you're feeling better. My regards to your pooch, and keep on moving through, okay?
Thank you. Well, tune in tomorrow night. We are having a huge dance music star tomorrow night. I don't want you to miss it.
Really? Who is this?
His name is Ernest Cole. And if you'll go to strictlyconfidentialradio.com and go to tomorrow's calendar date, there's a link there to his site and his music. He's one of them high-energy kind of guys, the kind I used to love to play.
Very good. Right now I'm listening to New Age over the cable station. This sort of talk. And by the way, thank you for the email on the Clivesdales and the 9/11 commercial.
Yes. And did you get the YouTube link to Divine?
No, I haven't gotten to that yet. I had to do a spyware thing and had to go through like 180-something files. Files. You know how that is.
Yeah, they always come up at the worst possible time.
And then Bill Gates loves me because he sends me at least two or three updates a week, and I had to do that. So you know how that is.
House
is maintenance, right?
They send updates just so that the other updates won't feel lonely.
He's got more updates than Carter has liver pills, huh? For sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can't leave anything alone.
Listen, very interesting program and very good expose on what's going on down there. Honestly, it really just makes you wonder, doesn't it?
It does. It's outrageous. Unbelievable. The police won't even identify the name of the caller from Florida government. You know it had to be Jeb Bush. You just know.
Well, all I can say is sometimes, you know, heard melodies are sweet, but those unheard are sweeter, as John Keats once said, you know?
Okie dokie.
People like that scare me. They really do, because I'll tell you what
scares me, too. Yep, that unlimited power and corruption, and they're getting scarier because they think they're about to lose it, and, you know, it's pretty big. Losing power is worse than losing all your money, I think.
Well, they don't, you know, power is addictive. It's highly addictive. It's probably more addictive than any substance known to man, either nicotine or cocaine. And once these people have this addiction to absolute power, which is corrupted absolutely, they'd rather kill you than give it up. They really would. And that's what scares me.
I completely agree. And Feeney has demonstrated to himself that he can successfully do that. Obviously, within days of the announcement.
Mm-hmm. It's no wonder that I sort of retreat into my own little world and pretend like it's not there and just think back on kinder, gentler, more elegant times, you know?
Yeah, I completely understand, Jim. And sometimes, some days I read this stuff, I just can't believe it. But thank you for calling, Jim. I appreciate the call, and I hope to hear from you again soon.
Okay, buddy. Take care, and have a good day, and a good night's rest tonight, okay?
Thank you, sir. I shall. And that was Jim, and I'm always glad to hear from Jim. There's usually a story in there that you have to sort of brace yourself for. He's got a million of them, apparently. Tell you what, let's do. It's the bottom of the hour, and you're listening to Strictly Confidential. As we go into a break, I'll remind you that the telephone number is 877, the number 4 head-on. I'm your host, Peter Godbold. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
I'm getting so sick of hearing people try to minimalize what's going on. And China's up to it now, too. This idea that, you know, we're going to try and make moves, but not at the detriment to our economy. Hello! How many times do I have to say this? No planet, no economy. No planet, no business. No planet, no commerce. Drives me absolutely insane. And like I said last week, we have George W. Bush pressuring the G8 to soften their language while at the same time making public statements to tell the G8 to get with the program. Excuse me? What bloody planet are you on?
Join me, John Fox, for Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network, 10 to 11 a.m. weekdays, here on the Head On Radio Network.
Those people I know.
Janine Marks, a 12-year-old, was fairly normal. She spent a lot of time online. One day, she met a new friend. The new friend had the same problems at home. They liked the same bands. They worried about the same subjects in school. They promised to keep each other's secrets. They wished they went to the same junior high. The new friend had good news. He said he was going to be in Janine's area one Saturday. He thought it would be amazing if they could just hang out, go to the mall. Janine agreed. The new friend didn't want parents messing this up. Janine showed up alone. So did her new friend, who wasn't in junior high, wasn't nice, and wasn't a 14-year-old boy. Last year, 1 in 5 children was sexually solicited online. Help delete online predators. Call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com to learn how to protect your kids' online life. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
Oh, my goodness. I have a major case of chair dancing. I haven't heard that. Well, I'd forgotten I had sent that up there as a bumper. Oh, that good choice, Bob. I tell you what, I'm going to have to go out and find me a disco after this, after the show. Maybe I could dress Doggy up. They'll never know. We'll just come slip it in there. She's good at slipping in, apparently. Aren't you, sweetie? And John, that was a great promo. Way to go, guy. And he doesn't get enough thanks around here. He's our audio engineer, by the way, all the way from Australia. And he's able to equalize and diagnose and tell you exactly where to set the knobs and what cable goes where, all the way from Australia, never even having seen the stuff. Doesn't matter what brand. He's been there, done that. Just amazing. Just amazing to me. Oh, my goodness. There's so many wonderful people around this network. Going to do this very short story. It's a lady doth protest too much story, although it's not a lady. There's a right-wing Christian extremist, surprise, surprise, Past the Salt Ministries, and they've been on a crusade. What they do is they disrupt the church services of gay-friendly churches. That's part of what they do. But the fellow who heads it up went on a total rant. It's just too funny. regarding a gay pride celebration. Now, he says, this is, quote, "The meat on display will forever change the way you view homosexuality. Sin has no boundaries, no clutch, no emergency brake. Once you dip your toe into the pool of sin, especially sexual sin, there is a magnetism that will not let go." And, oh, this is just priceless. So, what he's been, you know, let me get it straight, okay? straight guys that I know who have been to, you know, to gay bars or to gay pride parades or whatever, never describe that event as being as having a magnetism that will not let go. They never use words like that. Their reaction is more along the lines of like, well, you know, nice dress, dude. You know, they describe it maybe as being interesting or entertaining or hilarious or boring or whatever, but they never describe it as a pool of sin with a magnetism that will not let you go. You know, straight guys are just not forever changed by the sight of a gay male meat on display, as this man put it, and they're quite capable of resisting the magnetism of homosexuality. In fact, they find the magnetic pull of homosexuality pretty darn unmagnetic. And, you know, and if you think about it, that's kind of what makes you straight, you know? Oh, it never ceases to amaze me what these people are going to come up with next. Tell you what we're going to do. There's a couple tracks I'm going to get in tonight. One is a request, and the other is the Rufus Wainwright track that we talked about. We introed a while back in the first hour, and again, this was sent in by Michael and Jen from Columbus, Ohio, with the commentary that I read earlier. I am going to sick Billy Shears on you, sir. And the track is Rufus Wainwright doing Gay Messiah.
In 70s porn, wearing tube socks with style and such an innocent smile. Better pray for your sins. Better pray for your sins. 'Cause the gay
Rufus Wainwright with Gay Messiah, and in fact, the commentary says that there's a lot of wordplay in that song. In fact, that's true, and a generous helping of messianic imagery. And well done. I like that. And there's more Rufus Wainwright. I used to could talk, but that was years ago. I don't even worry about it. It's one of the things I don't worry about losing. there's more of that to come. I'm going to run a quick story now from... it comes to us from our friends from SDLN, the Service Members Legal Defense Network. We've had them on the show before. And it's another example of don't ask, don't tell, run amok. And in this case, without any proof whatsoever, the military is targeting a man that they're just assuming to be gay. He endured months of homophobic harassment and slurs. He's a decorated soldier, has an exemplary military record, and he's been targeted for dismissal by the Army because they think he's gay. He's Private First Class Mastro Marino, and he is now a military policeman and a member of the Army's prestigious Old Guard. It is a regiment that serves and honors the, it's at the White House the military, you know, the Arlington Cemetery, the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, those guys, those soldiers. It's a very prestigious job. It's high security, private functions for top Pentagon officials. Anyway, he was court-martialed in May after indecent assault charges with absolutely no proof were filed against him in February. The charges are that he sexually harassed other male soldiers in this new unit, Old Guard unit, that he was doing what, unwanted touching, verbal comments, and he was ultimately convicted on three counts of simple assault, but that's not the same as being gay, and it wasn't even simple assault. You see, and during the sworn testimony, during the trial, two of the prosecution witnesses said that they didn't consider the physical contact that happened to be an assault. It was the command that chose to bring the charges forward. You see, you're supposed to have some kind of credible evidence, or you're supposed to say you're gay. That's what Don't Ask, Don't Tell is all about. And it's obvious to him that there is some sort of an agenda going on with this. The investigators and the prosecutors did not find any credible evidence or didn't provide any to the jury that he had violated Don't Ask, Don't Tell in any way whatsoever. The unit basically did rumors and hearsay and investigation to say that he was gay and just to cast him as being inappropriate. He had never run into any problem whatsoever in any of the other units that he had been in until he was... And it was a very high honor to be promoted to the Old Guard. I mean, that's how good his record was. But he says it's the most intolerant and hostile and homophobic climate he's ever seen. You know, he said if it had been anyone else at all, there would not have been a trial. And in fact, the soldiers confirmed that. Apparently what happened, there was a situation where he needed to search a soldier. I have a reference on that here. Let's see. Where did it go? Okay, there's some, you know, build-up. They're calling him fag and queer and writing stuff on the lockers. But let's see. He apparently, where'd the reference go? He told a soldier, he was behind a soldier, and it was an appropriate situation for his job. He told the soldier to spread his legs and searched him. But he was standing behind the guy, right? So the guy didn't appreciate him searching him. And there was all these rumors going around that he was gay, so he was trying to say that because he was standing behind him and told him to spread his legs, that was sexual context and content, although the man who was searched did later say that if it had been any other soldier who had said exactly the same things and searched him in exactly the same way, he would have not said that it was any sort of sexual harassment. So, in fact, even the soldier who brought the charges is saying they're not really charges. But, you know, he's got commanders yelling at him, telling him he's a horrible soldier. You know, Congress can be full of them, but, you know, you've got to... Just amazes me. Okay, tell you what we're going to do. I do want to get this track because it is a request from a very important person, a VIP in the chat room. So we dare not ignore this request. But she has requested Laura Branigan doing Self Control, and this is a special version. It is a Hot Tracks remix. It is an excellent, excellent remix for some Laura Branigan did that back when 84. She's and our friend Alex the other evening was telling us that this song was first done by a man, one of the an Italian singer who goes by the name of Raff, and he in fact co-wrote the song in 2006. It's been performed by other European groups, and that in fact I always thought Laura Branigan was the owner and the originator of the song, but apparently Laura Branigan did the cover. I'm looking for a copy of the original of the Italian male singer singing Self Control. It's just got to be, you know, a guy singing Self Control just puts a whole different take on it. Nonetheless, this version is fabulous, and it's Self Control by Laura Branigan. Hot track. And there you have it. That is the Hot Tracks remix of Laura Branigan. Hot Tracks is one of the holy grail of remixes. And oh, what a great song. I think that even had a few ticks and pops in it. That came from Pure Vinyl. Yes, in fact, it did. I want to remind you to please join us.